DW Africa Link.
It's the show that brings you all the main stories from across Africa and beyond. Hello and a very warm welcome to Africa Link program on this Tuesday, September the 3rd. My name is Jen Nyinge.
I am Abubakar Jalo and we are coming to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany.
Coming up, Nigeria is a pressure cooker on internal conflicts. Those are the words of the United Nations Special Rapporteur on extrajudicial and summary execution.
Right now, there's insecurity all over the place, in all parts of the country, not just in the Northeast. Her report, I'm talking about the UN Special Rapporteur, is actually the truth of the matter.
And also coming up, Germany's Foreign Minister Heiko Maas is in Sudan just weeks after the military and civilian protesters formed a transitional government.
One thing that was impressing me, actually, is the concentration of the German on building peace. This is one thing that we really appreciate.
Well, as we look forward to that story and much more, let's first get the news in brief.
DW News.
I'm Shay Meineke with DW News. A British Conservative lawmaker defected to the Liberal Democrats on Tuesday. The move leaves British Prime Minister Boris Johnson without a working majority in Parliament. Johnson has insisted on leaving the European Union on October 31st with or without a deal. Opposition leader Jeremy Corbyn said, however, that a no-deal Brexit cannot happen.
We want a general election, as do all the other parties. The priority is to prevent a no-deal exit from the EU on the 31st. Many are alarmed at the consequences for jobs, for our economy, of crashing out on the 31st of October without a deal, which is what the Prime Minister seems determined to try to do.
Johnson has asked Parliament to approve a snap general election for October 14th if he loses the upcoming vote on blocking a no-deal Brexit. South Africa's President Cyril Ramaphosa has sounded off against a wave of xenophobic violence unfolding in several parts across the country. Ramaphosa said such attacks on foreigners should never happen.
Now, I'd like to condemn the violence that has been spreading around a number of provinces in our country in the strongest term. The attacks on people who run businesses from foreign nationals is something that's totally unacceptable. It's something that we cannot allow to happen in South Africa.
Sporadic looting and arson attacks have entered a third day across several neighborhoods in Johannesburg and the capital, Pretoria. More than 90 people have been arrested. German Foreign Minister Heiko Maas pledged to support Sudan's transition to democracy during the first leg of his four-day African tour. Maas said Germany would help the new political leadership after it was sworn in mid-August. Sudan has been gripped in a political deadlock after a military coup ousted autocratic ruler Omar al-Bashir in April. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. French President Emmanuel Macron welcomed Republic of Congo President Denis Sassou Nguesso in Paris on Tuesday. The Congolese president is expected to sign the Central African Forest Initiative worth over 60 million euros. The fund is expected to help Africa fight against deforestation and against raging wildfires in the Congo Basin. In central Mali, 8 bus passengers were killed by a road mine. Police confirmed the attack and said the blast took place as the bus was heading to the northern town of Gao. Further information is expected. And finally, an EU anti-fraud agency has found that 370 million euros of EU funds were misused in 2018. The watchdog said the funds were used not as intended. It has insisted on the bloc recovering the funds. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Shay Meineke.
Thanks indeed for staying with us. My name is Jen Nyinge, and of course, this is Africa Link program.
I am Abu Bakar Jalo. So many of you have already started commenting on our Facebook page, DW Africa, and we would also like to welcome you listening to us via our partner radio stations across the African continent.
Let's now get going. And the UN Special Rapporteur on Extrajudicial Summary or Arbitrary Executions has said Nigeria's multiple security problems have created a crisis that could lead to instability in other African countries if not addressed. Agnes Kalama described Africa's most populous nation as a pressure cooker of internal conflict.
Special Envoy Kalama said the police and military had shown an excessive use of lethal force, which combined with a lack of effective investigations and meaningful prosecution could cause a lack of accountability. So are these findings true of Nigeria? A question I put to Nigerian journalist Shoya Jayesimi.
At the moment, I think that's very fair because in Nigeria, right now, there's insecurity all over the place, in all parts of the country, not just in the northeast, where it's been reported that the military have gone into extrajudicial killings. Of course, the military authorities have said this is not true. So her report, I'm talking about the UN Special Rapporteur, is actually the truth of the matter.
Nigeria is actually grappling with the Boko Haram crisis, a series of high-profile ransom kidnappings, the conflict between Fulani herders and farmers, and most recently the banned Shiite group, Muslim group that is threatening to go underground. Is the government really doing enough to tackle some of these problems?
The government is trying its best, but apparently the government is overwhelmed with the issues of insecurity across Nigeria because the president keeps assuring the people of the country that, yes, the authorities are on the issues, law enforcement is going after criminals. Fine, if law enforcement officials are going after the criminals, arresting as many as they can, the number in custody are very insignificant to those who are still out there perpetrating these crimes. There's proliferation of arms all over the place. There was a mop of arms done early last year, even late last year, but still, these arms still find their ways into the hands of people, and people commit heinous crimes with some of these arms.
Now, you're saying that the government is overwhelmed, and it takes me to my next question. The international community has been quite reluctant to meddle with these issues in Nigeria, or so it seems. Is it that the government that is preventing, say, for instance, ECOWAS, the sub-regional body, to help Nigeria?
Well, like if you know, the West African sub-region, with all due courtesy to other countries in the sub-region, Nigeria seems to be the big boy in that sub-region. So it's a sort of, what kind of support can you get from the other smaller countries in the sub-region? But looking at it from another perspective, as it concerns the northeastern part of the country, there's a multinational joint task force. Nigeria is involved. Three countries in West Africa, curbing crime along that axis under the platform or auspices of the multinational joint task force.
But we're not just talking about the Boko Haram crisis here. We're also talking about the kidnappings that are happening in Nigeria. Can't Nigeria make use of external help from the West African sub-region or even, say, the AU, for instance?
Well, it would be difficult because Nigeria claims to have what it takes. And Nigeria thinks and believes clearly that in terms of security and intelligence, that it's superior to other countries around it. But the facts of the matter are that the country is being overwhelmed. The results are not being gotten. So if these other smaller countries have any area of comparative advantage that Nigeria doesn't have, why not ask your fellow West African brothers or even African continent brothers to give you the necessary support you need?
Now, the description there from Agnes Kalamad saying that Nigeria is a pressure cooker, and if that blows up, it might affect the entire West Africa sub-region. Don't you think it's that point where ECOWAS needs to say, we need to step in now?
It's not the first time we're hearing this kind of thing. I remember in early 2008, there was a top American diplomat who was in Nigeria as an ambassador who said 2015 that Nigeria will cease to exist. This is 2019, Nigeria still existed. So this is coming from the UN Special Rapporteur, based on the findings she has made from her report from August the 16th up till when she left Nigeria yesterday. So it might not be different for those who are perennial optimists about Nigeria, that look, this will come, Nigeria will ride over it.
But do you think it's a problem?
Yeah, the problems are clearly there. It's a huge problem. Citizens of the country are not pleased with the administration about the way it's handled security issues, especially being that security is one of the three cardinal points of the current administration. Tackling insecurity, curbing crime and corruption and economy. So this key one is a thumbs down for the administration, so many citizens actually say.
That was Nigerian journalist Shola Jayesimi speaking to me earlier.
And we've got a lot of feedback coming in because on our Facebook page, DW Africa, we asked why there is so much insecurity in Nigeria. And one comment is from Odison Chris Kosoko, who says Nigeria is a failure and cannot do anything right as far as the APC regime is there.
Well, most of you are also commenting on our page, DW Africa on Facebook. And I have one here from Adams Zikaman Bahari. He says, that is what human rights is in Nigeria, brutality against the population.
Thanks if you are in Nigeria, tell us what you think and what is causing this insecurity. Now moving on to another top story is that Germany's foreign minister Heiko Maas is currently in Sudan to meet with recently appointed Prime Minister Abdallah Hamdok and leader of the Transitional Council General Burhan. Maas will meet with members of the civil society and civilian protesters that succeeded in toppling former dictator Omar al-Bashir.
Now, the German foreign minister's visit comes weeks after the civilian protesters agreed a transition government with the military. Maas intends to offer Germany's helping hand in the transition of the country. So, how can Germany help? DW's Al-Sanusi Adams put that question to Dr. Hanan Abbas, a Sudanese expert on sustainable development.
I believe that we now live in a village and we all contribute to one cause. If we looked at the bigger picture and if we looked at sustainability and sustainable development as one part, we all contribute to the global issues. So if there is a need in any area, everybody should contribute to that need so that we can achieve a bigger impact. So if we are speaking particularly about the role of Germany in Sudan, we believe now we are in a transitional period where we need everybody's help and support. The help and support that is directed to our needs, developmental needs.
The foreign minister of Germany is visiting the country. He's going to be meeting with the Hamdok government to see whether Germany, as a player in the European Union, will have a role to play in the development of Sudan. What would that role be, in your opinion?
One thing that was impressing me, actually, is the concentration of the German on building peace. This is one thing that we really appreciate. So if we spoke about, regardless of how much development are we speaking about how much strategy are we speaking about, if we did not concentrate on building peace, that would not happen. Because then you're creating an unstable economy, which nobody is interested in contributing to. So we really welcome the initiative where this would show us really how genuine are people focusing and concentrating on our need, and how they would like to contribute to our need. For years and years and years, we continued to support strategies for others, not our own strategy as a Sudanese nation or even an African continent nation. So we really appreciate that somebody is coming to help us in the area where is our real needs lie. Without it, we cannot speak about sustainability, we cannot speak about economy, we cannot speak about growth, we cannot speak about even bringing our country up.
But what kind of help do we need here in Sudan? Do we need aid? Do we need fund? Do we need capacity building? What do we really need in Sudan?
One thing we don't need is aid. We don't need aid. We kept receiving aid for a very long time. And if now we assess the impact of that aid, there is nothing. So aid is not helping us. We need knowledge, empowerment, but again, based on our strategy, not an empowerment that is imposed on us. Not an agenda that comes for us that specify the type of empowerment that we... No. We will specify our need. We will build a framework for the strategy where we would like to go. And then that is the type of help that we would come to. We need partnerships. We need collaborations. We need inclusiveness.
That was Dr. Hanan Abbas, a Sudanese expert on sustainable development, speaking to our correspondent DW's Al-Sanusi Adams in Khartoum.
And we also wanted to know how can Germany help Sudan in its crisis. And on our Facebook page, Paul Oze says Germany has a record of straight talk without bias. Germany has as of now, is one of the only countries in the EU the African continent can truly trust.
And a quick one from George Ebechwe. He says, human rights and peace are known to Berlin, and Berlin places strong emphasis on self-development. Well, those are your comments, and keep them coming on our Facebook page, DW Africa. You are listening to DW's Africa Link, and I am Abu Bakar Jalo.
And my name is Jen Nyinge. Thanks to all of you who are right now live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. I can see Rajib Shutum watching us from India, and Ashu Atem, and not forgetting our usual Monju Irinel.
Who is actually sending a shout out to us. Well, a big shout out to you back, Monju. And it's a pleasure to have you there. Now, coming up in the next 15 minutes, single-use plastic straws are a menace to the environment. And most of them are facing ban almost everywhere. We meet a young Ugandan entrepreneur who has ported a viable alternative to those drinking straws.
These straws, long ago our ancestors used them for drinking the local brews called Amalua.
And as we are counting down to the last 15 minutes of the show, we've got a piece on how Poland marked 80 years since the German invasion that triggered World War II.
That's right, Jane. We have that story coming up in the segment Focus on Europe. But before that, Africa is still shocked and bewildered by what took place over the weekend in South Africa. Fellow Africans were attacked by local mobs and their shops and businesses plundered in what many have described as xenophobia.
South Africa's President Cyril Ramaphosa condemned the widespread looting and arson attacks on foreign-owned businesses across Johannesburg and the capital, Pretoria, calling the violence totally unacceptable. Across Africa, the reactions have been that of outrage. Let's first hear from DW's Tuzo Kumalo in Johannesburg.
The South African government has insisted that the latest wave of looting of shops and properties largely belonging to people from other parts of Africa is not xenophobia but mere criminal in nature. The government now wants other African countries whose nationals are involved to come to the party in finding solutions. This is what Tulas Ncesi, the Employment and Labour Minister, told the media.
It's a regional matter. We would need the International Relations Department to lead us so that we can be able to interact with our counterparts in the SADC region and talk about joint strategies on how we're going to deal with this particular matter. It's not a simple matter, it's a very complex matter. And we hope that as we are interacting with our counterparts, we are going to be able to find the solution.
This is Privilege Moshaniri in Harare. The government, business community and citizens of Zimbabwe are outraged at the xenophobic attacks across the border in South Africa. I spoke to Chipo Murangwa, who is a lawyer, and Everson Chakava, whose brother, the truck driver, was petrol bombed at an intersection in South Africa, and this is what they told me.
What's happening in South Africa is rather unfortunate, because in as much as the South Africans have grievances, you know, against the government, they don't have a right to murder people, they don't have rights to even ban business properties. I believe the South African government has to act right now and protect the human right to life.
Ningnang is a truck driver.
My young brother is a truck driver in South Africa. A month ago, he was petrol bombed at a road intersection. He was beaten up and left almost dead. He lost all the goods he was transporting. I had to travel to South Africa and stayed for a month while he was recovering in hospital. I don't think such behavior should be tolerated. Will it be good if we were to do the same to South Africans if they were staying here?
This is Sam Olukoya in Lagos, Nigeria. The latest wave of violence against Nigerians living in South Africa has enraged the youths of Nigeria. Nigerians have borne the brunt of the attacks South Africans have directed at Africans. In Nigeria, students have held protests and picketed South African companies operating in the country, while social media reports on the xenophobia is stoking their discontent. This is what young Nigerians are saying.
We are calling an all South African organization in Nigeria. Yes. We have given you 7 days ultimatum for you to act. If not, you pack and leave our country.
Solidarity forever. It's really a sad one to me because South Africa have big businesses here in Nigeria and they are really making a lot of money. And meanwhile, we allow their businesses to operate here in Nigeria without any hindrance. Whereas they are killing our own people over there. I think it's a very sad one because if it continues this way, I don't think Nigeria will allow them run their companies in Nigeria anymore.
I don't know why South Africans are like that. I remembered reading Nelson Mandela's book, Long Walk to Freedom. I mean, he praised Nigerians during the apartheid and how Nigeria stood as a big brother. So as much as I don't support it, if they are to attack anybody, it shouldn't be Nigerian. There should be some measure of sanity. I mean, something should be done to curb this thing.
There was a university in South Africa that had told me they would give me the scholarship. So with what I've been watching, South Africa versus Nigeria, in Johannesburg, in Pretoria, I was okay. Maybe it's God that doesn't want me to go there. So let me look elsewhere for scholarship. So it's as bad as those of us interested in going there for a PhD degree. We are now looking elsewhere. I'm actually afraid I shouldn't get attacked one day, even on campus.
Those are Nigerians reacting to the xenophobic attacks on Africans in South Africa. And before that, we heard from our correspondent in Zimbabwe, Privilege Mushanere, and also from Tuzo Kumalo in South Africa. Well, if you'd like to follow more on this, go to our YouTube page where we have a whole debate called the 77%. It's also about the xenophobia in South Africa.
Yes, indeed. And Abu, this topic is a hot issue on all social media platforms. It started yesterday. So, and on our Facebook page, we've got a comment from Oyadole Ofolabi who says, South Africans knows nothing about the struggle and the kind of pains other African countries went through for them to be free from the white people. For instance, Nigerian civil servants donated some parts of their monthly income to support the movement. The AU must do something on time.
And a quick one there from Godsin Gabo that just came in on our Facebook page. It says that South Africa should be the last country to think about this. I'm sure this xenophobic violence are carried out by few and bad individuals. Well, thanks for your comments there. Keep your comment coming on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
Africa on the move.
Africa is on the move indeed, in a way simple but practical. A young Ugandan entrepreneur has ported a viable alternative to single-use plastic drinking straws, and it's something that grows naturally all over the world. It is none other but the humble sage grass that is traditionally harvested for thatching, weaving and rope making.
Well, through his company, Our Roots, Akram Semambo says he aims to see plastic straw usage in Uganda drop by almost half in the next 5 years. DW's Geoffrey Waitaker caught up with him, and his report is now presented by Assumpta Latos.
Akram Semabo, together with his employees, is busy in the wild cutting sage grass. They have found a way of making money from a free natural resource and protecting the environment. Semabo started his business 4 months ago with about $55. He uses the sage grass to produce straws, something that reminds him of his grandparents' wisdom.
These straws, long ago our ancestors used them for drinking the local brews called Amalwa in Luganda. And these straws they used to get them from their gardens and other places. So we saw it that it could be a great opportunity for us to fight single-use plastic straws with the plant-based ones.
The production process is simple. After cutting, the sage grass is trimmed into the right length before being washed and sterilized in boiling water. The natural straws are then dried in the sun, making them ready to use and reuse. Semabo is proud of what he has been able to achieve so far.
We are looking at making people aware that we not only we can purchase product, but we can also grow products as we grow food.
Today, his company, Our Roots, employs 13 people. He also has 8 regular clients buying his 100% organic product. They include up-and-coming restaurants in the capital, Kampala. Hanif Rehem Tura is the managing director of Yuho Izakaya restaurant.
We've been seeing a lot of plastic waste pile up actually in our restaurant, among others, and really in plastics with containers, with straws, and this is one of the forefront items which we see in a glass in front of a client every day, and really it's, we thought this is a really great place to start.
Plastic straws need 200 years to decompose. So customers here, like Sherry Sekwa, are welcoming the natural alternative.
This is the first time I'm seeing it. Before, I've used the paper straws and the plastic that are very common everywhere. But I would absolutely use them at home because I feel like you can clean them better and I mean, it's natural.
Akram Semabo has his sights set high for his business. He also wants to teach Ugandans on how to make the environmental friendly straws at home for themselves.
Assumpta Lato's there with that report by DW's Joyfrey Whitaker.
Focus Europe.
This week, Poland marks 80 years since the German invasion that triggered World War II. Several world leaders attended the event in downtown Warsaw, including US Vice President Mike Pence, German Chancellor Angela Merkel, and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky.
Following the invasion, Poland remained under German occupation for more than 5 years. It also lost around 6 million citizens, and most of its towns, villages, and industries were destroyed. With more, here is Christina Kripal.
Ninety-one-year-old Zofia Burszaczyńska remembers it like it was yesterday. When the Germans attacked Poland, she was 11 years old.
Mom told me, get up. I was in bed, in my nightgown, when suddenly we heard a loud roaring sound. The ceiling started to crack. The windows got blown out. Our bedrooms were located close to where the first bombs were dropped.
In several waves of attacks, dive bombers of the German Luftwaffe dropped bombs onto Wieluń. The small town was unprotected, defenseless. The attack from the skies was a war crime. It was a precedent for the Nazis' goal of total annihilation, which characterized the war. The pharmacy run by Zofia Burszaczyńska's family in the town was completely burned down. Zofia's father, a Polish soldier, held on to a few photos. They were all that remained.
My father had these photos with him while he was in captivity. Every Sunday, he would write a couple of lines on them. One of the photos reads, Sunday, 1939, Germany, I think of you all the time.
Zofia Burszaczyńska, who now works in her son's pharmacy, still has trouble dealing with the past.
When you ask the Germans about this, they answer, that wasn't us. The Nazis did that. But where did the Nazis come from? From Germany. And if you ask me whether or not I can forgive, no, I'm trying. But I don't believe the Germans. What if this were to happen here all over again?
Just like Zofia Burszaczyńska, Dr. Marian Kubalczyk was 5 years of age when the war started. Later, he examined the survivors for the psychological long-term effects of the war.
I was part of a committee for disabled persons. There, I kept examining people whose afflictions were a consequence of their experiences during the air raid. They were unable to work.
8 years after the start of the Second World War, many Poles feel that the air raid on Wieluń and Germany's attack of their country still has not been suitably dealt with in German-Polish relations.
That was Christina Kripal with that report. Thank you very much.
And now taking you back to our top story is that The UN Special Rapporteur on Extrajudicial and Summary Execution has termed Nigeria as a pressure cooker on internal conflicts. And Germany's Foreign Minister Heiko Maas is in Sudan just weeks after the military and civilian protesters formed a transition government.
And thanks for all of your responses that's been coming on our Facebook page, DW Africa. It's been a pleasure. And until next time, my name is Abubakar Jalo.
And I'm Jen Nyinge. Take care.
DW, made for minds.